Hi, and welcome to another episode of The Leadership Enigma. Well, this is going to be a cracking episode because I was in a two-day workshop this week myself in relation to the subject of culture. And maybe we've all heard that phrase, an iconic phrase, culture eats strategy for breakfast, lunch and dinner, let's be fair. But culture, what is it? Culture, why is it important? But trust me, it's important. So we need someone again far wiser than myself to talk about all things culture, someone who lives and breathes it, but leads it as well. So I'm delighted. You do not want to miss this particular episode. Come back to me, where we have the wonderful Gary Ridge, who is currently the CEO and chairman of WD-40. I defy anyone not to have a can of WD-40 in your house somewhere. If you don't, trust me, you need one. You don't want to miss this one. Come back to me just after this.
During constant change, your leadership has never been more important to create a better and more inclusive world. You're listening to The Leadership Enigma, a podcast for the insatiably curious to explore the power of human-centered leadership to create real momentum for positive and sustainable change. Whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, or corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts, and disruptors as we discover that success leaves clues. Now, here's your host, Adam Pacifico.
Well, there we go. It's a massive, warm welcome to you. Gary, thank you so much for taking the time to come on to The Leadership Enigma.
Hey, g'day, Adam. It's good to be with you. But I tell you, I've got to give you my official introduction. Can I do that?
Yeah.
G'day. I'm Gary Ridge. I'm the consciously incompetent, probably wrong, and roughly right chairman and CEO of WD-40 Company.
I love that. Straight away. There, see, that's that humility. Gary, I've also got to say, I did see your shoulders bopping just slightly there as we were playing the intro. I just want to say, so it was just instinctive and automatic with you. I noticed that, which is always a good sign. Listen, I really have been looking forward to this opportunity to chat to you. It's a big shout out, I think it was to Chester, who introduced us to each other, and that's absolutely wonderful. But I want you to start by telling the listeners a little bit about you, because yes, you are Gary Ridge, as you've just introduced yourself, but Gary Ridge, who is Gary Ridge? How did you become the CEO and chairman of WD-40? There's a rich history there, so I want to kind of ask you to start at a point you think is going to kickstart this conversation about culture. Where do we start,
well,
Gary?
Thanks so much. Well, as the listeners might gather from my accent, although when I go home to my homeland of Australia, my mates tell me I've inherited a little bit of an American accent. But I was born in Sydney, Australia. I joined WD-40 Company in 1987. I opened the Australian subsidiary with a fax machine under my bed. That's how it all started.
I remember the fax.
Yeah. What is a fax? And 6 months later, on January 1, 1988, we opened our Australian subsidiary, and I worked in Australia from 88 through to 94. In 94, I was having a chat with the then leader of WD-40 Company, and I said, is there anything else you'd like me to do? And I'd spent a lot of time in Asia. One of the dreams we had at WD-40 was to take the blue and yellow can with a little red top to the world. And although it had established itself somewhat in countries like the United States, which was the core market, a little bit in the UK, it was called Rocket WD-40 back then, and some others, we saw there were lots of squeaks around the world, and we were just the boys and girls to take care of it. And he said, do you want to move to the US and help us, you know, do that? And I said, wow, that's pretty exciting. That's really, really disrupting yourself. My dad worked for the same company for 50 years, from when he was 16 to 65. He was an engineer. And I said, what do you think about that, Dad? And he said, you can't go wrong with that stuff, son. So Dad was right. So I moved to the United States. Then in 1997, the then leader, Jerry, retired. And for some reason, the board of directors of a public company decided this Aussie bloke might make a good CEO of WD-40 Company. So I was given the privilege to become the leader of what we now call the tribe. And I must tell you, Adam, I was scared stiff. I didn't know what I didn't know. And it was really the big pivot was I went back to school. I did a master's degree in leadership at the University of San Diego. That's where I met my dear friend and my mentor, Dr. Ken Blanchard. He was my professor, the one-minute manager.
Right. Yep.
And I learned a lot about servant leadership, and I was brave enough to try and put some of it into action.
Now, Gary, you're very down to earth. I know that's maybe the Aussie nature as well. And we've spoken before, there's a real humility to you as well, which I always find really refreshing. Because as you say, let's be honest, you're the CEO of a company that is iconic to so many people. When I grew up, always, I remember with my father, there was always a can of WD-40, as you say, the can there with the yellow and the red top, which everyone recognizes. But just help people understand just how widespread is WD-40 now on a global basis? Because we all know it, but just how far-reaching is it now?
Oh, wow. It's the global brand. We're in 176 countries around the world. Wow. We have offices in 17 countries. In Europe, we're based out of Milton Keynes, but we have offices in France, Germany, Spain, Italy, Portugal, the Netherlands. We have an operation in China, Australia, Canada, then Mexico. So we really are truly a global brand now. The sun never sets on the blue and yellow can with a little red top.
So what's it like to lead a company with such an iconic brand? Could you say the blue and yellow can with a little red top? I think if you just said that to people, they'd say, oh, you mean WD-40. What's it like to actually have the responsibility to lead something that is iconic, Gary? It's not a word of describing it.
Yeah, it's very humbling. You know, culture is our competitive advantage. You know, the blue and yellow can, little red top. WD-40 was invented in 1953 in San Diego. The company was called Rocket Chemical back then, Adam, and there was a problem with condensation and corrosion in the umbilical cord of the Atlas space rocket. And there were 39 attempts to create a formula to solve that problem. The 40th one was the one that was successful, and that's why it's called WD, water displacement 40th formula. So it's a secret formula. We've never patented it, so it's a trade secret. So the product is special.
Yep.
But what is equally as special is the culture that we call the will of the people. And you can have the best brand in the world and a great strategy, but if only 20% of your people go to work every day and are engaged and have a high will, then the result is going to be minimal. So what we like to talk about is imagine a place where you go to work every day. You make a contribution to something bigger than yourself.
Yep.
You learn something new. You're protected and set free by a compelling set of values, and you go home happy. And here's the real thing that comes from that we're passionate about. Happy people create happy families. Good thing. Happy families create happy communities. Good thing. Happy communities create happy countries. Good thing. Happy countries create a happy world. Very good thing. We need a happy world. And today, more than ever, with the learning we got riding the COVID roller coaster and the slap up the side of the head leadership got, we need to really focus on sending people home happy. Aristotle, who was born in 384 BC, said, pleasure in the job puts perfection in the work. So we're pretty slow learners. And isn't it our role as leaders to create a culture where people get satisfaction out of what they do and they go home happy because they're treated with respect and dignity and they're given the opportunity to grow?
Gary, I just want to actually say a massive thank you for you describing culture in that way, because you know I'm currently at Heidrick and very much we live by the purpose of a world better led. And I find that compelling. And I just find how you described what you passionately believe in, it's compelling. And it's more compelling, dare I say it, than a blue and yellow can with a red top. Because whilst that's an iconic brand and an iconic product, this is all about the people. I want to deal with one thing first, if I may, because you've said something that really resonates with me, and we spoke about it just before we went into the recording as well, and that's the need for organizations, global organizations, iconic organizations such as WD-40, to be a force for good, to actually provide something to the world beyond a can that's blue and yellow and a red top. What are your thoughts on that and about the roles of public company CEOs, large organizations, and the people who work and make them up now to be a force for good, to really provide back to the communities within which we operate? Because the world's gone bonkers and we need good leaders, Gary. So what is your personal view on that, really, that mantra?
We have an absolute responsibility. And in fact, as you were describing that, I was getting goosebumps because we have a responsibility. You know, if you think about stakeholders today in a business, our definition of a stakeholder is anyone without or anything without that who they support us, we would not exist. So if you think about who we need to support us to exist as a company, we need our customers, we need our tribe members or our employees, we need the communities that we operate in, we need the environment that we're given the permission to play in, we need to, you know, our owners, our shareholders. So, you know, we need to look at this in totality because we have a job to do. It's not just making money. You know, you can make money short term, but the challenge is how do you build a business based on the infinite game? And Simon Sinek talks about this a lot in, you know, his latest book, The Infinite Game, and Start With Why. You know, if you think about our why statement, why do we exist? This will blow your mind. Here's why we get up every day. We exist to create positive, lasting memories, solving problems in factories, homes, and workshops around the world. We solve problems and we create opportunities. Our second value in the company is we exist to create positive, lasting memories in all of our relationships. Because at the end of the day, all you have is a memory. So if someone asks me what business I'm in, I tell them I'm in the memories business. And they say, what do? Work for Disney? I say, no, I work for WD-40. And they say, I remember when. And you shared that with me earlier. Yeah. I remember when this product solved my problem, made my life a little better. So our just cause is to make life better at home and at work. At home and at work for the customers we serve, at home and at work for the people who come to work with us every day.
Gary, I'm loving this, and I can tell you right now that you and I will be connecting more often in I think, the work that I do and the work that I know you're going to do. Because in some ways, I feel you might just be a kindred spirit. So it's a massive thank you to Chester for the introduction. And Chester told a wonderful story on the show as well in relation to WD-40. I want to ask you another personal question, if I may. Where's this coming from? You are passionate about culture, people, experience. You use the word tribe. I'm going to come back to that and ask you where that comes from and why. But you talk passionately about, as you talk about your employees and your community and country and the world, where's that coming from, Gary? It didn't, you tell me. It hasn't just emerged. It's part of your DNA. So what are your earliest memories of that was what really inspired you, that energy around culture, people, experience?
Well, you might remember that I mentioned to you when I got to lead WD-40, I was scared.
Yeah.
And I was actually flying on a Qantas 747 from Los Angeles to Sydney, 35,000 feet above the Pacific Ocean. And I was actually reading some of the work of the Dalai Lama. And the quote that I just stuck in my head was, our purpose in life is to make people happy. If we can't make them happy, at least don't hurt them. And what hit me right in the between the eyes, Adam, was I have just been given the opportunity, if I'm brave enough, to make a lot of more people happy than hurt them, because I've been given the opportunity to lead a company globally. And I thought, this is my calling. I need to do this. That's why I went back to school and I said, now I need to find out how to make that statement come true. And I was given this gift of this opportunity. And as I've said, you know, as I'm about to refire at the end of the year, not retire, refire, I've just served my 25-year apprenticeship on leadership. And I am passionate going forward about really going out and saying to leaders who say this can't be done, I'm going to give them the quote from Nelson Mandela, it always seems impossible until it's done, and you can do it. It's simple, not easy, and time is not your friend. Leadership is not, you know, a game for the weak-hearted. You've got to have a heart of gold and the backbone of steel, but it can be done.
Gary, you've had an incredibly successful career. And I know towards the end of the year, you're transitioning, as you say, you're refiring into a new challenge. Many would say, wow, you've hit the pinnacle of success. You're the CEO and chairman of a public listed company that's globally recognized. Is it time now to play some golf? But I know, having spoken to you just a few times, that you are insatiably curious, a lifetime learner. And if I'm wrong with any of this, Gary, you've got to tell me, but you are really fired up for what's next. Where's this coming from?
And a very bad golfer.
Yeah, me too, which is why I'm never going down that path. But where's this inner energy and passion coming from then? So even after you say 25 years within this organization, you are stoked for what's next. How come?
Well, 35 years with the organization, 25 years with the responsibility and privilege to lead.
CEO, yeah.
Because we have to do it, Adam. But there's no choice. You know, I have grandkids. I have the world. You know, I've been given this opportunity to make a difference. And I go out and I speak publicly about this, and people come up to me and say, you know, we don't want to be in the environments. We have the opportunity to make a serious difference. You know, and I talked to you about this guy.
Let's talk about this guy. And if those who are listening now, you're going to have to describe what you're holding up here.
I'm holding up a little doll. It's a doll. It's actually yellow with a red tongue hanging out, and it's got a big type A on the jersey that it's wearing, or the sweatshirt that it's wearing. And this is Al. Al is the soul-sucking CEO of a very well-known company called Fear Incorporated. And Al leads one of the most toxic cultures in business world. Now, of course, this is a made-up character. I made him up so I could talk about him. And when I go out and speak and I throw out these, you know, little dolls, and I got this idea from our dear friend Chester Elton, because right. He throws out carrots. And I said,
he does.
I said, Chester, Al meets the carrot, right, is really what we should do. But, you know, I get to talk about Al. And Al has these toxic habits that create bad cultures. Let me share some of them with you, may I?
Please.
So Al is a master of control. He must know it all. Al is corporate royalty. Al has spent many years climbing up this corporate ladder. Thou shalt bow down to Al. Al shall have the palatial office, the special car space. Al always, you know, gets treated differently to anyone else. Al doesn't care to speak to the people that really matter. He probably never has had morning tea in the cafeteria because his coffee's brought to his desk. He thinks learning is for losers. And here, more importantly, Al's ego eats his empathy instead of his empathy eating his ego. He always has all the answers. He must always be right. He loves a fear-based culture. He thinks micromanagement is essential. He doesn't follow through with his commitments. Don't you think you can depend on Al? And finally, Al hates feedback.
I've got to ask you a question, Gary. You have undoubtedly met CEOs who will remain nameless who fit into that category. How do you coexist next to them? How do you try and inspire them or see a different way?
Well, let me say to you, Adam, at one time in my life, I probably had some of Al's behaviors.
Okay.
And what's really important is the awareness. You know, Marshall Goldsmith wrote a great book called What Got You Here Won't Get You There, The 20 Bad Habits of Great Leaders. I've had all of those in some degree of abundance in my life. The question is, are you aware of that? Because I don't think most CEOs get up every morning and go to work saying, I want to create a place where people don't want to come see.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, imagine the CEO who books a meeting on your Outlook or on your Zoom. Do you go, yay, I can't wait to see that person because I know I'm going to have an engaging time and I'm going to learn? Or do you go, wait a moment, I just got sick, I need to go home? You know, so most of them aren't aware of them. But if you can build that awareness around what good leadership looks like, and then you've got to work hard at it, that's really important. So I think awareness and commitment is really important.
So I know this is passionate to you and to the people that you lead, but help those who are listening who are, they may be in small, they may be in medium, they may be in large businesses, who haven't quite understood yet the power of culture. How would you describe culture to people and to those who are new, starting out and learning and building their own amazing small businesses? What's culture, Gary?
Okay, so let me give you an algorithm for culture. Pretty simple. Here it is. Culture equals, and the equals sign means happens when, parentheses, values plus behavior, close parentheses, times consistency. There's the algorithm. So here's where you start. If you're a leader out there, the number one thing I want you to do right now is put up your hand and say, hi, I am, and I am committed to building a culture where people go home happy. Good. Now we have commitment. Now, let's look at the algorithm. Do you have a compelling set of values in your organization that not only protect people, but set them free to allow you not to be the micromanager? Then secondly, do you love your people enough to reward them and applaud them for doing great work? But do you really love them enough to be brave enough to be a great coach to redirect them when they're not doing great work? And close the parentheses, are you brave enough to do that every day? Now, Adam, when I was back in Australia years ago, yep, at my high school, my science teacher gave me a Petri dish. And my science teacher said, we're going to grow culture. And then he said, here's what's important. What goes in it, this Petri dish, is important. And how you look after that Petri dish is very important. So what we're going to do is, here's the ingredients we're going to put in to make this great culture. Yep. And you, as the owner of the Petri dish, or let's call them the leader, you're going to watch that Petri dish every day. And you're going to be brave enough to treat toxins that get in there or pull them out. Because if you don't, that Petri dish is going to go sour overnight. So that's what's really, really important, is having those things in place to be able to do that.
No, I love that. Now, just could you just give us that equation again? So for listeners, they may have been listening intently to how you were describing it. Just repeat the equation for them again, Gary.
Culture equals, and the equals sign means happens when, parentheses, values plus behavior, close parentheses, times consistency.
Gotcha. Now, I want to lock in, if I can, on two of those elements, values and behaviors. So here's a conversation I have with lots of people that many organizations want to create values. You as an organization, as a leader, as a CEO, you have personal values, you have organizational values. How do people work out for themselves how they live the values day to day? Because am I right in thinking, yes, whilst you can define behaviors, you've also got to give people some trust them, to empower them and give them a little bit of autonomy to operate within the values as they see fit, depending on where they work, how they work, regionally, sure, where they work. So how do people within WD-40 do that? Work out, how do I live the WD-40 values day to day for me personally?
Certainly. So firstly, what you need to do is you have to have a set of values. Hopefully they're hierarchical, so you don't give people the opportunity to cherry pick them. You know, our values are, we value doing the right thing. We value creating positive, lasting memories in all of our relationships.
Yep.
We value making it better than it is today. We value succeeding as a tribe while excelling as individuals. We value owning it and positively acting on it. And we value sustaining the WD-40 economy.
Right.
So there's the headline.
Okay.
And each one of those values has a paragraph written underneath it that actually describes what the behavior and execution or living that values looks like.
Okay.
And then we ask our tribe members globally, regularly and formally, to share with us how have they lived our values, because we don't want people to visit our values. We don't want visitors. We want people to live our values.
Yes.
But more importantly, the behavior of the leader is so important. So we don't call people in our organization managers or supervisors. Everybody is a coach. So I am the number one coach in the company, and people who report to me are the people that I coach, and it's the way it goes down in the organization.
Okay.
So think about the attributes of being a great coach in executing values. And here's an example. You and I know that rugby's a great game. You're very lucky in the UK to have a very fine coach of your rugby team. I think he's an Australian.
Yeah.
But you never see great coaches running onto the field, picking up the ball and heading for the try line. You never, where does a great coach spend their time? On the sideline, observing the play, and in the locker room, building the culture or the camaraderie. So if you have a great set of values, you can use the opportunity to have a conversation with someone as a coach to say, look, here's a behavior I saw you play on the field. And, you know, as your coach, I want to help you get an A. I don't want to mark your paper. I want you to score the try. So here's some observations I have from being your coach on how you might be able to play a better game and you get the reward for that. So the values, to answer the question completely, the values need to be integrated into the coaching behavior of the leader, and they have to do it all the time. Consistency, consistency, consistency.
Because we've all heard that phrase, haven't we? The fish rots from the head. So there's a real importance, isn't it, on you as the leader of the organization, but also the other leaders of leaders and leaders of managers and whatever titles that there are. I appreciate you may not use them, but it's absolutely incumbent, isn't it, for everybody to be able to role model positively those behaviors that support the values day to day.
Right. And, you know, I wrote a book with Ken Blanchard, The 1 Minute Manager. It's called Helping People Win at Work. And the byline is, I'm not here to mark your paper. I'm here to help you get an A. So right. Our job as coaches and leaders is not to mark people's papers. It's here to help them get an A. So what does an A look like? What does accountability look like? And do I get up every day with one thing in mind? Adam, I'm here to help you get an A, mate. How do I do that?
Yeah.
Okay, let's understand what an A looks like. Here's what it looks like. Now let's see what barriers are getting in your way. Go and play your game on the field and let me observe it. And, you know, I might identify some areas where you need some different training. And if you do, we'll bring someone in to do that. Or, you know, you may need to have an attitude readjustment around something and, you know, we can help you do that.
We've just spoken about values and behaviors. And for many organizations, culture is at the heart of things not going well. So what are some of the things that leaders need to look at in order to understand that there is something wrong with the culture before it gets too ingrained and too, used the word toxic when we talked about Al? So what could leaders, what must leaders be on the lookout for? What should their spidey sense be telling them? What's on their radar?
Well, there's a couple. You know, there's the formal way, but then there's the informal way.
And yep.
The informal way, I would suggest they need to get their floor shims dirty. They need to get their shoes dirty.
Okay.
They need to, you know, lead by walking around. They need to observe people. And maybe they just need to walk up to someone, Adam, and say, good morning, Adam. How are you? Are you okay? What's on your mind? And then shut up.
Oh, no, I really mean it.
You know, I really mean it.
As opposed to, as I'm about to answer, they're already 15 feet gone the other direction.
Exactly. And, you know, we've been doing employee opinion surveys since the year 2000.
Right.
We started before they were really, you know, the thing to do. And our employee engagement score is 93.5%.
Wow.
So 93.5% engagement globally. Some of the other scores that we really love are, get this one. This one will blow your mind. 98% of our tribe globally say, I love to tell people I work at WD-40 Company. Not like I love to tell them that. And 97% of our tribe globally say, I respect my coach. Now, remember who the coach is.
Yeah.
The coach is their boss. Most people, the biggest reason people leave companies is they hate their boss. 97% of our people say they respect their coach. Why? Because we are dedicated not to marking their paper, to help them get an A, to give them an opportunity in their life to be better, and we treat them with respect and dignity. You know, there are four pillars: care, candor, accountability, and responsibility. What does care mean? Care means your ego, your empathy eats your ego doesn't eat your empathy, right? You do what, you know, do what mum and dad taught us to do every years ago, say please and thank you, pick up after yourself, you know, clean up your room. One of the greatest books I ever read was Everything I Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten by Robert Fulghum. Just take the lessons in that, what you learn in kindergarten. So caring is important. The next one is candor. What does candor mean? No lying, no faking, no hiding. I think most people don't lie in organizations. They fake and hide. Why do they fake and hide? For Al, the fear guy. So what we said years ago is we're going to take the word failure out of our organization. And I'm going to hear something that, as an Aussie, you'll know it's not true, right? I've never made a mistake in my life. But what I have had is millions of learning moments. So we don't call mistakes and failures failures. We call them learning moments. And a learning moment is a positive or negative outcome of any situation that needs to be openly and freely shared with all people. So care, candor, accountability. What do you expect from me and what do I expect from you? And have we agreement on that? In other words, what does that A look like?
Okay.
And then finally, responsibility. Are we going to hold ourselves responsible to each other? And we have something in the company called the Maniac Pledge.
Go on.
I'll read it to you. Here it is. It says, I am responsible for taking action, asking questions, getting answers, and making decisions. I won't wait for someone to tell me. If I need to know, I am responsible for asking. I have no right to be offended that I didn't get this sooner. And if I'm doing something others should know about, I am responsible for telling them. So that's our pledge of responsibility to each other.
Who created that, Gary?
We created it years ago at the company. It was I think way back, one of my colleagues, Mike and I, penned it out, and then we kind of scrubbed it, and now it lives and has lived in the company for many years.
And I can tell you, you're incredibly proud of what you've achieved. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because we're spending all our time talking about the internal metrics. So we're not talking here about revenue generation. We're not talking here about top line, bottom line. We're talking here about happiness. You've just given us some statistics, which are mind-blowing, Gary. Most companies and leaders of companies will be listening to those and think that's not even possible. But it is, because you are a WD-40 living proof of, and would you say that culture, without a doubt, the culture that you've created, that you live, that you stoke quite deliberately, is at the heart of driving that kind of success?
Without doubt. I mean, culture is the amplifier. Remember, if you can have a great strategic plan, take it to Harvard and get it marked up, you get 70 out of 100 for your strategic plan. However, only 10% of your people have a high will of the people. In other words, are engaged. 10 times 70 is 700. But take a reasonable strategic plan. Let's say you get 50 out of 100. Half of it's right, half of it's wrong.
Yep.
But 80% of your people go to work every day making a contribution to something bigger than themselves and are excited and learning. 80 times 50 is 4,000. Do the math. It's simple. You know, if you think that you're going to have 20% or 10% of your people going to work engaged and you're going to have a great outcome, you got rocks in your freaking head. It's not going to happen. And, you know, oh, duh. You know, what did Aristotle say? Pleasure in the job puts perfection in the work. Oh, duh. And by the way, you talked about performance metrics. Over the last 25 years, we've 6X'd our revenue and we've taken our market cap from $250 million to nearly $3 billion.
Wow.
So as an investor, if you had invested in our company over that period of time, you would have had a compounded annual growth rate of total shareholder return of 15% plus a year. But all we do is sell oil in a can. No, we don't. We create positive, lasting memories, solving problems in factories, homes, and workshops around the world by having a highly engaged workforce who live our company's values every day, because purpose-driven, passionate people guided by their values create amazing outcomes. We proved it.
Listen, Gary, are you sure the board are actually going to be happy with you going on to the next chapter with all of this fire and passion? Have you had a chat with them recently?
I am, because we have a great leader coming in. Steve Brass, who's going to be our new CEO, has been with the company 31 years.
Oh, amazing.
He's actually a Yorkshireman.
He'll like his cricket.
Yeah. We transferred him and his family over to the US 5 years ago. Steve totally gets it that that culture is the driver. And he's being an Englishman, he's way smarter than this Aussie guy. So, you know.
Yeah, I'm having none of it. I know how shy and retiring the Aussies are, Gary. So, listen, I know you've written a recent article as well. Many people have talked about the Great Resignation. I think it's a little bit of a leadership zeitgeist at the moment, but you don't call it that, do you? You talk about the Great Escape. So tell the listeners a little bit about what you mean about the Great Escape.
So my question, my challenge to the listeners today are people escaping from your culture or are they escaping to your culture? So before COVID, you know, people would go to work and you know, we know the terrible statistics about how so many of them were kind of disengaged, but yeah, it was kind of okay because they went home and they had a life that was kind of okay. And, you know, I could live with that. And then COVID hit and suddenly the okay wasn't okay anymore. And they said, you know what, I'm not putting up with this anymore. And unfortunately, some people ended relationships during COVID, but a lot of people said, my relationship with my toxic environment at work has to stop. I can't have both not okays.
Yeah.
So they said, I'm going to go find a place where it's okay. And so they're looking for that now. And in fact, Larry Fink, who is the CEO of BlackRock, and you know they own just about everyone in the world, in his last letter to CEOs, he made kind of a comment that basically said, you know, it is very clear that companies with great cultures perform better during COVID. And I was quoted in the New York Times, and my ending to that was, oh, duh. Of course they did. So, you know, my challenge to the leaders is there, this is your chance. If you've got a toxic culture, take it that you've just had a slap up the side of the head. Take a step back, spit out the ego, and ask yourself, how do I now look at building an organization where actually people smile and they go home happy? Because if they're going home happy, they're doing better work. And guess what? You'll build a company playing the infinite game that you'll be proud to hand on to others as you go forward, which is where I am. You know, our goal was, let's build an enduring company that I'll be proud to hand on to the next generation. And I am so proud to hand this on to our next generation because they know how important culture is.
Now, something tells me, and I can't remember whether I'm making this up in my mind, but are you Hawaii bound at some point, Gary, or have I made that up?
No, we are building a house in Hawaii. But you know, things take a long time in Hawaii. You know, it's like island girl. You know, it's like Fiji time. You know, there's no time. So yeah, eventually we'll build a house in Hawaii and we'll spend, it's halfway between, well, not halfway, it's closer to Sydney.
Yeah.
Because I have a daughter that lives in Sydney with a granddaughter. I have a son in California with two grandsons. And I'm guessing if we actually build a house in Hawaii, people will come.
Oh, build it and they will come on this occasion,
build
I think.
It and they will come.
Listen, with the passion that you have and the experience that you have, I know you're highly sought after as well. How can people get in touch with you, also understanding that you are going to be transitioning into a space where maybe you will have a little bit more time as well to be able to really help people understand and drive the culture conversation and the importance of culture at the heart of success? What's the best way for people to connect, to continue the conversation, learn more?
Sure. So, yeah, at the end of August, I will step down from my role as a CEO of a public company, and then I'll be retiring off our board in December. And I'm currently starting to spin up or pay more attention to my passion around the culture coach. Yep. Or sharing what I'm doing. So you can connect with me on LinkedIn. Just search Gary Ridge, G-A-R-R-Y Ridge, R-I-D-G-E on LinkedIn. I have a website. It's www.thelearningmoment.net.
Yep.
Thelearningmoment.net. Or if you went to the soulsuckingceo.com, it would take you there also. So those are probably the two best ways to connect with me. And really, you know, what I'm doing out there is just sharing my scar tissue. I've got a lot of scar tissue, so I just want to share it.
Do you know what? It's been absolutely brilliant to reconnect with you, Gary. It's a privilege to have this conversation. And I keep saying that's the privilege of this podcast, is we wouldn't have met and we wouldn't have been able to have this conversation. So I'm grateful to you. I'm grateful to Chester. And so I've got a final question. With all of the scars that you have, with all of the experience and the wisdom and the mistakes or the learning moments that you've been through as well, bearing in mind that, as you, most people wouldn't have known that, WD-40, because it failed 39 times before you got to 40. Is there a really powerful piece of leadership advice that is front of mind for you that you've given or received that's just a standout that you would like to share with people? Is there that front of mind something?
As a leader, it's not about you. It's about the people you're given the privilege to lead. And the three most important words you'll ever get comfortable with are, "I don't know."
I don't think the advice gets any better than that, does it, for anyone who's listening to this episode of The Leadership Enigma? Gary, you've been an absolute superstar for taking the time. Thank you so much. I hope you've had some fun as well.
It's been great. It's great. You know, as you know, being an Aussie, you know, you said we might be kindred spirits. Did you have anybody that was a convict in your early life?
Quite possibly.
Because we were sent to Australia by the best judges in England, and what we got was sunny skies. And well, anyhow, we'll leave that one alone. And
yeah,
thank you. We love it. I love being part of the Commonwealth. So thank you.
Oh, it's been brilliant. Gary, take great care. You've been an absolute superstar.
Join us again next week for more tips and strategies on the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with your host on LinkedIn or our YouTube channel. And remember to get your daily learning to build success at www.insights.emeritus.org. Download the Insights app and start learning for free. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms. Thanks for listening.